From WNYC, this is The Sporkful.
Okay, right off the bat here, a warning. I love that so many of you listen to this show with your kids. That's why I created the Sporkful Junior Eater Society. But this week's show is not for kids. It features Dan Savage, the relationship columnist from Savage Love. It gets pretty graphic, and the bad words are not bleeped. So if you're not into that, now's your chance to pick a different episode. If you're with your kids, I recommend the one where an 11-year-old teaches me about hot sauce. Or the one with Weird Al. That one's also pretty great. Okay, here we go.
On Valentine's Day, it's romantic. People want to feel like their partners are attracted to them. And think about the times you actually do want to have sex with your partner. It's not when you sat across the table watching them chew. People want to have sex with their partners after they went out and did something together. Get out of the house. Go effing bowling. Whatever. Just go be physically active. Go do. Go move with each other, and then you'll want to screw. Watch your partner inhale chocolate mousse at a restaurant after a three-hour dinner. You're not going to want to put your dick in there.
I don't know. You've never seen my wife eat chocolate mousse.
You could put a video up on Twitter, and I will check it out.
Food is a huge issue in relationships. From what you order on a first date to how you cook together when you've been married for 20 years. How and what people eat can be common ground, but could also be a source of tension. Today on The Sporkful, Dan Savage dishes on eating in a relationship. How do women and men order differently on first dates? On the morning after, what do you cook for breakfast if you want the person to stay? What if you want them to go? And how can couples share power in the kitchen without driving each other crazy?
Get the fuck out is also a division of labor.
Like, right.
Somebody's moving around the kitchen, you know, and they're doing their thing, and they're not, you don't communicate very well, and they don't want to knock into you and bustle like one of you, just go the hell away.
By the end of this episode, you'll be ready to wrap that special someone in fondant and take him up to bed. Actually, please don't do that. Trust me. This is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman. When I was in Seattle on my book tour, I was really super excited to sit down with Dan Savage. He's smart, he's funny, and he gave me some great advice. I guess that's why he's an advice columnist. Here's our conversation. I want to go through some of the different ways of sharing food, and I want you to tell me what you think it says about the person.
Okay.
You're sizing this person up on a date.
People eat very differently because they're being observed.
Right.
And they know they're being observed because somebody is sussing them out about whether they want to keep seeing them. And people eat self-consciously, particularly women, eat very self-consciously at that stage in a relationship.
How so? Like, give me specific examples. What do you think is different about the way women eat in that situation?
Well, women aren't supposed to, you know, when it comes to sex, have desire. You know, they're not supposed to be the actors or agents of their own shit, of making their sex life happen. They can't appear to be too lustful because of all the, like, slut-shaming and guilt we heap up on women. And that spills over into food, you know, appetites, sexual appetites, for food can be stigmatized as well. And women will perform eating and eat very little as a way of saying, you can marry me and I'm not going to be the same size as your mom in 20 years.
Right.
I'm not endorsing that.
Right.
That is an observation.
Right,
I'm not saying
right.
That's how women should eat.
No, no.
Or how all women do. You know, you get into trouble when you start generalizing about 3.5 billion people.
Right.
But generally and broadly, I think, you know, you read what women have to say about how they eat on dates when they know this straight guy is observing them. And the straight guy eats very unselfconsciously and a woman picks it a salad.
I mean, but I think I know that when I was dating, I would be somewhat conscious, maybe less so than a woman, but like I wouldn't eat something that was like, that I was likely to drop all over myself, which I do frequently when I eat.
Me too.
Right. I wouldn't order something that might negatively affect my digestive processes later that night.
Yeah, you don't want to fart when you're getting a blowjob.
That's right. Yeah, that's a turnoff, I'm pretty sure. And so
you hope it's not always a turnoff, but you're always hoping it's right. A turnoff. You don't want to accidentally find yourself in bed with somebody who's happy you had the baby back ribs and the beans.
Well, you know, to each his own, Dan, as I'm sure
I'm down with the each his own thing, but I don't want to. I should keep it to I statements. I shouldn't make it general. You don't want the universal. You don't want to find yourself in bed.
Right.
Some of you do. I don't.
Let's talk about the morning after. What do you cook for someone the morning after when you want them to stay? And what do you cook when you want them to leave?
Well, you pull out the stops if you want them to stay. You don't make something you can't make. Don't make something bad. Don't like pull out Martha Stewart and try to make Eggs Benedict or something stupid. But if and breakfast is simple. I never understand these people who go line up for brunch on Saturday and Sunday morning outside. There's a restaurant by my house. People line down the block for brunch. Making eggs is easy. Poaching a couple eggs poached on toast and some sliced fruit. That's all you need. And that's really easy. And it's nicer and almost more thoughtful than something crazy. You don't want to appear to be trying too hard. No Eggs Benedict. You want to try hard and fail, because then what you've said is, I suck at this cooking thing. And you don't want to, you know, overplay your hand. So something simple that you can bust out.
See, that's an interesting
thing,
though.
That says, please come back.
Right. The thing about trying too hard, this, I think, is an interesting relationship issue. I'm sure you hear about it all the time in your work. But, like, why is it that people don't like people who are trying too hard?
It's not that people don't like people who are trying too hard. It's that the sensing that they're trying too hard creates sort of an obligation on you. It makes you aware that, you know, it puts a burden on you almost. If you have sexual relations with someone for the first time in your apartment and they come into your kitchen after showering off and there's some insane spread on the table, they're going to think, this is a little much for breakfast the first time I sleep over. This is actually kind of makes me feel obligated to, A, if he sleeps over at my house or she does, to lay out a similar spread. Like, what's being communicated by that is, I'm so into you, I'm so into you. And people aren't ready to hear that at the start. Even if they are into you equally as hard, they aren't ready to hear it, because saying that with food or just saying it with words that early in a relationship, it displays poor judgment and poor impulse control. The two things people look for in a partner.
Let's talk a little bit about Valentine's Day. Do you and your husband do anything special on Valentine's Day?
Nope.
I feel like it's almost like the relationship version of New Year's Eve. Like, all this expectation, all this pressure to make it something super special, which invariably makes it disappointing.
Right. And you've been assaulted by commercials. There's this anxiety around not getting what other people are getting. And I don't think that people should do anything on Valentine's Day. My standard advice, though, for people who do something on Valentine's Day, sex first, then go out to dinner. Because the calls I get and the letters I get in the wake of Valentine's Day are from people who are nervous and disappointed and spooked that they didn't have sex on Valentine's Day. They went out to dinner and then they came home and fell asleep. Well, because you were full of heavy food and booze and chocolate and you fell the F asleep. So have sex at 7 o'clock and then go out to dinner at 9:30 or 10. When the restaurant's empty, easier to get a reservation, the staff isn't so frazzled, and you'll have already nailed the sex part.
Let's talk about couples cooking together. There was a term that I heard, I don't know if the New York Times coined it, but that was the first time I came into contact with it a while back. They did a story about couples cooking together.
Which only happens in Viagra commercials.
Right. Well, they coined the term kitchen bully. And I don't know if you have this experience in your home. I know I have it sometimes in my home in both directions.
Which is why couples don't cook together and shouldn't cook together.
Okay, go on.
Well, cooking, I think, is a solitary process. And everybody has their own ideas about how it should be done. And if one of you is the better cook or enjoys cooking in a relationship, I think you should cede the cooking to that person. If they indeed enjoy it, you're not burdening them with the cooking. It's what they want to contribute. Let them cook and get the fuck out of the way and you clean up. But, like, you know, you only ever see couples cooking together merrily in commercials where relationship dynamics are misrepresented in order to sell us products.
So tell me, here's my personal situation. You tell me how you think I should deal with this. So I think my wife would freely acknowledge that I am the more experienced, accomplished home cook. But she's a good cook, and there's a few dishes that she makes that I love that are really delicious. There's a few other dishes that she makes that she likes more than I do, but they're still good, and I'm happy to eat them. The issue is that, especially since I've started doing this food podcast, sort of without meaning to, I've accumulated more food and cooking knowledge. So now I know more, and it's very hard for me to walk into the kitchen and see her cooking. And
don't look. Turn right around and walk back out.
Really?
Yeah, don't look.
Even if I could say something that would make the meal better, like if I have a tip that's like, actually you should cook this chicken at 400, not 350. It'll be better.
If you can gently slip it in.
Okay.
Which applies not just to cooking. You can get away with all sorts of stuff in a relationship if you can gently slip it in.
Okay.
So lube that comment up and gently slip it in.
So you but be don't me. Stand I'm my there wife.
And pick your bet. Like, one comment per meal cooked, maybe.
Okay. That's good advice.
But not this, that, the other. Right. Don't take over.
Okay. So let's go ahead and role play here,
all
Dan.
Right.
I'm my wife, you're me. You just walked in. There's one comment to make. Tell me, how would you say it to me?
I think the way to do it is this. You know, one of the people I interviewed said it's a good idea to do this. Not I'm telling you that you're an idiot and you don't know, but we both didn't know this and now we both know it because I learned it doing my food podcast. So if you frame it not as I am correcting you, but I have this new information that corrected how we both used to cook chicken, maybe you'll get away with it. Maybe that's the lube you need to slip it in.
Okay, I like that. I like that.
Good luck with it. But I think you should go with my original advice, which is to back slowly out of the kitchen and go look at something else. If you can't look at somebody cooking without tossing comments out about how they could be doing it better.
Right.
That's a bad strategy for cooking. It's a bad strategy for sex. It's a bad strategy for driving. It's a good strategy for high conflict relationship. But, oh, you know, you could be cooking that chicken, but, you know, I have a blowjob technique for you while you're down there that maybe you might find helpful. It would improve the blowjob for me. Nobody wants to hear that.
Right.
While they're blowing you, nobody wants to hear that.
Coming up, my conversation with Dan Savage continues. I'll ask him for more advice on my own relationship. You know, like, I like to eat well, but Mrs. Sporkful doesn't care as much about going to restaurants as I do. So what's the solution? Also, I'll talk to my friend Anna Sale, host of the podcast Death, Sex, and Money.
It does totally transform the dynamic in the household when the woman is not the primary cook. It's like whoever is in charge of the food is really in charge.
She'll tell the story of how a plate of bruschetta helped convince her to get married. Again. Stick around. Welcome back to The Sporkful from WNYC. I'm Dan Pashman. If you haven't already bought a copy of my book, Eat More Better, well, never mind. I'll just give it to you. Sort of. You see, we're giving away 10 copies of Eat More Better, and all you have to do to enter is sign up for our email newsletter at sporkful.com/newsletter. I'll drop you a line every week or two to let you know a new podcast is up and to share videos, recipes, and other bits of deliciousness. I think you'll like it. If you're already on the mailing list, you're already entered to win. If you're not, sign up at sporkful.com/newsletter by Friday, February 20th at noon Eastern for your shot at glory. Again, sporkful.com/newsletter. We'll get back to my conversation with Dan Savage in just a minute. But first, I'm pleased to welcome my friend and colleague Anna Sale to the show. Hey, Anna.
Hi, Dan.
So folks should know Anna hosts a great podcast here at WNYC called Death, Sex, and Money. And Anna, you talk to celebrities and regular folks about a lot of very intimate topics. I'm curious to hear, what have been some of the conversations you've had that have really stuck with you personally long after the show was taped?
Well, something we're putting together right now has really brought a lot of it back. We're putting together a radio special for public radio stations of some of the best conversations we've had about love and romance since the show started. The special is called Real Love, taking a little, you know, our cues from Mary J. there, a Valentine's special from WNYC's Death, Sex, and Money. And we put together all these conversations about love and romance. And the thing about Death, Sex, and Money is we really try not to gloss over what the hard things are that we deal with. So you hear Jane Fonda talking about what it was like after her divorce from Ted Turner and all of a sudden living in her daughter's bedroom without a closet and the sense of quiet and aloneness that she had never really felt. You hear musicians Jason Isbell and Amanda Shires talking about how they fell in love and also how they got through his alcoholism together.
That was a great episode. I bought his record because I listened to him on your show. That was a great interview.
They're both fantastic. And Dan Savage is in the episode. He talks about what he and his husband fight about. It's not sex. It's money. Terry likes to shop online, apparently, right. I learned. So all of these conversations are together in an hour, but food does come up.
Does it?
I brought a clip just for you.
Oh, good. Go on.
I was talking to writer James McBride, who wrote The Color of Water and The Good Lord Bird, and he got divorced in 2013. So we talked about where he is in life now and thinking about relationships and what's next. And this is what he said.
Love's important. Companionship's important. Sex is good to have. But if your heart's not full, then, you know, sex is like drinking beer. And that first one's good. By the ninth one, you know, you're poisoning yourself.
I thought it was a really good metaphor.
Yeah.
I was like,
it
yeah.
It is true. Beer can teach you a lot about life, Anna. I think it's a good metaphor for so many things. I know you say that Death, Sex, and Money is a show about things that we think about a lot and need to talk about more. Has doing the show changed the way you talk about or think about any of these subjects?
Yes.
How so?
Well, for starters, I started the show because I felt like I needed more guides in navigating big stuff. I was divorced. I was trying to figure out if I was going to start a family with this boyfriend who was a long-distance boyfriend. And as I was starting the show, we broke up. And in my real life, Arthur, my boyfriend at the time, he wrote Senator Alan Simpson, former senator of Wyoming, and asked him to call me because he didn't want to break up. So what basically happened is I was sort of a mess trying to figure out how to get through my fear of commitment after divorce. And Alan Simpson and his wife, Anne, who've been together for 60 years, became these important counselors for me.
And this piece on Death, Sex, and Money was also featured in This American Life. It was a fantastic story. I mean, Arthur really came through by contacting a former senator. He gave you a great story for your podcast.
He reminds me of that a lot. He reminds me of that a lot. But it was good because it was immediately starting the podcast from a place of deep humility, because it shows that I didn't know what I was going. I mean, Ann Simpson calls me on my shit.
I saw them. There were some wounds there.
What'd you see?
Well, it was a little touchy. You were a little, you know, a little standoffish. And thought, well, either it'll work or it won't. But at least you were willing to give it a try.
Yeah.
If it cratered, I wouldn't lose a bit of sleep. Not a bit. Not really, I mean that, because you've done what you can do.
So at the end there, you hear Alan Simpson saying, we've done our part. If you all don't make it after this, we're out. Fine. But we are getting married.
Well, spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. It all worked out.
Well, congratulations. We're glad that it did. And speaking of Arthur, I know, you know, in this episode of The Sporkful, we're talking a bit about food and eating and relationships. I talked to Dan Savage about some of the issues that my wife and I have. Like, when she's cooking in the kitchen, it's very hard for me to resist giving what I think of as advice, but some other people may think it comes across as criticism. and just sort of how you navigate situations when one of you wants to eat something different from what the other one wants to eat over time. Is this something that you and Arthur ever deal with?
Yeah, and it's actually, Arthur is the first person I've ever been in a relationship with who is an excellent cook. Like, Arthur is like a sauce guy. Like, he pays attention. He's really into cooking things.
What does
slowly.
It mean to be a sauce guy?
Like, if you're making chicken for dinner, he'll take whatever, you know, whatever's in the pan afterwards, and he'll add some whiskey and some garlic and some spices, and just to pour it over the chicken, just so we're not just having plain chicken. I'm like, you can make a sauce? Not a recipe? So it's been interesting because it does totally transform the dynamic in the household when the woman is not the primary cook. It's like whoever's in charge of the food is really in charge in a lot of ways.
I wish you'd tell my wife that.
It sounds like she doesn't want you to be fully in charge of
right,
the food.
Right. No, I think we have a pretty good power-sharing agreement. Uh-huh. You feel like you've ceded a certain amount of power in the kitchen to Arthur that maybe in previous relationships was yours. Is that a relief, or do you, to some degree, wish you had that power back?
I will tell you a story. When Arthur and I first got together, we met on the East Coast, but it was sort of, we were friends, you know, we had a friend in common, we met, and then he went back to Wyoming where he was living at the time. So our first real date was this long distance visit. And I didn't know Arthur very well, and we had this beautiful visit, very nice, but I was still getting to know him. And then my airline reservations got all screwed up, and so I had to like figure that out, and I was spending all this time on the phone with airlines and really stressed out. And I turned around, and he had just like brought this plate of bruschetta out that he just made in the kitchen while I was dealing with the airline stuff. And it was like lunchtime, and I was hungry and frustrated, and it was this incredible feeling of, oh, I can be taken care of too. And that really was the beginning of our relationship, was like, oh, this feels really nice. This is what relationships should feel like.
Well, the podcast is Death, Sex, and Money. I'm a huge fan of it. I listen all the time. I hope that folks will subscribe in iTunes or the WNYC app, wherever you get your podcasts. Please check out Death, Sex, and Money, and keep an ear out for that Valentine's Day special.
Thank you, Dan.
Thanks, Anna. Now, let's get back to my conversation with Dan Savage. I want to get a little more advice from you on my relationship with my wife as it pertains to food, all right?
Do I have your wife's consent to hash out your relationship
yes,
with her on
yeah,
the show?
Yes, I called her on the way here. Okay, she's good. A huge fan of yours. She loves what you do.
Oh, thanks.
But here's one of the things that we run into is that she's not as passionate about food as I am. She doesn't love to eat. Like, her idea of a great night is just, like, eating cereal on the couch and watching The Real Housewives. Like, that's all she needs. She also doesn't like to spend money, so she doesn't like to go out to, I'm not even talking about a super fancy, super expensive restaurant. Even for the two of us to go out and spend $80, for the two of us to eat a decent meal, like, I get excited about that, and she immediately, the check comes, and she's like,
wasn't worth it.
Right,
for her.
Right. And I used to resent that a little more until I got a hold of these flavor tasting tabs that test your palate. And she couldn't taste anything on the tabs, which the results show that she is in the bottom 25% of tasters. So it's almost like she has a disability. So I feel like I can't really hold it against her. And on one hand, hey, look, we don't do everything together. I can go out for a nice meal with someone else.
Ding, ding, ding. That would be my choice.
But I liked, you know, it's fun to share a great meal with someone that you care about. And so she's a good sport, and so she'll sometimes be like, yeah, sure, like, let's go out wherever you want to go. But, like, there's a little bit of a disconnect there. So what's the solution?
You go out with other people and have those fancy foodie meals with other people who can really appreciate and enjoy it and dish about it with you, and you don't make her perform delight in a restaurant where she is bored or unable to taste all the subtleties. My husband likes to go out dancing, and I hate it. I don't enjoy it. And every once in a while, I'll go to a club with him just to, like, go to a club with him. But otherwise, he goes out with his dancing friends, his clubby friends. And I don't resent him for going out on those nights. I'm like, bye, have fun. Thank you for not being the kind of insecure bag of slop who can't do this on his own.
So really what you're advocating
for... You go for the fancy meals. She stays at home and watch Real Housewives and eat cereal. And then you're both happy.
Right. So what you're advocating for my wife and me is a polyeterist relationship.
Yes, essentially.
Polyetery.
You should. That's a good term. You should totally have that trademarked immediately. Yeah.
But what happens? Like, she might say it's okay. Sure, honey, let's be polyeterist. But then I go out all over town,
and she's upset. Well, you just have to check in. You just have to check into each other. You have to talk to each other.
And how does that explain? Tell me how that conversation goes.
Well, it works in my house with Terry going, I'm going out tonight. Do you want to come? And I say no, and he says, okay, bye. So I think you go to her and say, I made reservations at this restaurant. If you want to come, I'd love to go with you. If not, I'll ask somebody else to come along and let her choose, let her pick. And then she, without any stigma or guilt or sad feelings or long faces, is free to opt out whenever she wants.
What if she starts going out for nice meals with other people? How am I supposed to feel about that?
I don't know. I don't know how you're supposed to feel about that because...
That's the other side of the polyetery coin, isn't it?
Yeah, it is the other. But that's, you know, to stretch the sexual sort of analogy to its breaking point, there are people with really low libidos whose partners get permission to go have sex with other people. And then when the low libido partner thinks they want to have sex with other people, the partner who's already been out there having sex with other people is like, I'm only doing this because you don't want to have sex very often. And now you're saying you want to have sex more often?
So how do you advise those people?
I advise them to break up. Maybe we should back slowly away from this analogy.
So my wife was raised in a kosher home, which you probably know means no pork, no shellfish, but people may also not realize that it means you can't mix meat and dairy. And it even means in a true kosher home, you're supposed to have separate plates and separate utensils and separate cooking implements so that nothing that ever has dairy on it can ever touch something that had meat on it. Now, she is not so insistent that we have our home that way. But I'm also Jewish, but I was raised in a, like, we eat everything household, and I love pork and shellfish, and I love to cook, and I love butter on just about everything. And we've reached this sort of, like, tenuous compromise where I said, okay, I won't cook pork or shellfish in our house. I can eat whatever I want. We're out of the house, and I can buy cooked pork or shellfish outside the house and bring it home and eat it on a paper plate. And I also won't cook with meat and dairy together, like, really blatantly. Like, I'm not going to melt cheese on top of her chicken. I'm not going to make her chicken Parmesan.
And deep dish pizza with sausages right out.
Right. None of that. But, you know, here's really the issue is that when I just talk about the kosher issue with her on an intellectual level, we really kind of agree that...
That it's horseshit. That it's goofy... God saying dance or jump and you have to say how high.
Or that it's something...
Or he'll smote you.
Since I know my wife will listen to this, to put it in more gentle terms, that it's something... It's rules that were perhaps invented with the best intent many thousands of years ago.
And now it's just a purely arbitrary cultural inheritance.
Right. What I find frustrating, though, is that intellectually she and I agree, but she feels guilt. Because she feels like this is a tradition that's been in my family for many generations. And I respect that, and I'm respectful of the way her family wants to eat. But it's frustrating for me when it's more like, I would almost, if she was like, I want to be Orthodox, I'm just taking all the rules, I'd almost be like, okay, you know, that's an issue on a larger level. But like, it's more that she just feels...
What is it you want me to say that's going to upset your wife? That you, I feel like you should slip me a piece of paper across the table with exactly what you want me to say about this.
Well, how should I... How
to get your... To help your wife through this. Or what it is you've always wanted to say that you haven't been brave enough to say to her about it.
I think I probably said it all. I guess I don't know if you have any advice. Like, is this sort of tenuous compromise that we have, which sometimes is a source of tension because she'll say, like, she feels like I'm pushing her away from this thing she wants to observe... But sometimes I feel frustrated because I feel like it's all a bunch of BS and why should I have any restrictions? So we have this kind of tenuous compromise that works 9 days out of 10. Is that the best we can hope for?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Is there something else we should be doing differently?
Tenuous compromises are, I think, the gold star for long-term relationships. If you can get to a tenuous compromise about something, Yahtzee, you win. You won't get to, surrender, unconditional surrender on most sort of points of contention in a long-term relationship. But if you can hammer out some, carve a groove into each other and hammer out a workable compromise, do you feel really restricted and restrained by the compromise that you can't make a pork loin for dinner for your family? Is
not
that
terribly restricted. Not terrible. But it's also, you know, like my parents will go buy me a delicious lobster roll and bring it to my house. And that is delicious and wonderful.
But you have to eat it in the car.
I can eat it at home, but it's still, I'm sort of like, but I would like there to be more lobster rolls in my life. I'm not a...
but there'd be less wife, Ben.
That's
so
true.
You have to pick.
Okay.
The price of admission, more wife means fewer lobster rolls, and hopefully you love your wife more than you love dead lobsters.
I do. Dan Savage, the podcast is Savage Love Cast, the column Savage Love, the book American Savage. Thanks so much. Love your work.
Thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you, as always, eaters, for tuning in. Remember to sign up for our email newsletter so you can be entered to win a free copy of my book, Eat More Better, How to Make Every Bite More Delicious. Do that at sporkful.com/newsletter. Next week on the show, it's Lunar New Year. I'll eat dumplings with the members of a hip-hop metal band from Chinatown called Notorious MSG. And they'll talk about feeling sort of boxed in by the expectations of their parents and American culture. Remember to check out my friend Anna Sales' podcast. It's called Death, Sex, and Money. This show is a production of WNYC and The Sporkful. It's produced by Ann Sani. Our web writers are Talia Ralph and Alike Trong. Special thanks to Chris Bannon. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman reminding you to eat more, eat better, and eat more better.